Ladies and gentlemen, the sports leader welcomes you to Murph and Mac's Power Hour.
Power!
That is all power.
It's no commercials, no BS, no f***ing around. Starting with Mike Ruco.
Got a bit.
Followed by today's top six hop six.
Six, six, six.
Top six sports stories. And capped off with a cooler of content.
It'd be a lot cooler if you did.
It's exactly what you want and everything you need. So grab your coffee.
Who wants coffee?
Pound your juice.
This is some good juice.
Because Murph and Mac's Power Hour begins.
Fight, fight, fight the power.
Now.
Woo-hoo!
To all of those who don the orange and black, what Jerry Garcia is to deadheads.
The deadhead is that person, wherever they turn up in society, that's looking for an adventure in America. You know, something to do that's not like what everybody else does.
This man is to Giants baseball.
Good morning, good afternoon, and sit your butt down.
The San Francisco legend, Mike Ruco.
Hey, welcome back, Meat.
Joins Murph and Matt.
Save it for the morning show.
Now. Sponsored by your Northern California Honda dealers at NorCalHondaDealers.com. On KNBR 104.5 at 6.8, the sports leader.
All right, yes, indeed. We are kicking off the Power Hour. We have Adam Copeland in for Brian Murphy. We're doing it like this for the rest of the week, actually. Murph will be back on Monday. In the meantime, AC, Adam Copeland, and myself, Pauly Mack, take you right through the Power Hour. We say good morning and welcome back our great friend, Mike Ruco. Talking some, postseason baseball today, Mike. Couple of really interesting games. Yeah, good morning. How are you, Mike?
Yeah, good. Are you kidding me? Hey, I'm filling in for Kipe today, and I don't want anybody to worry about him. Everything's fine. He's in the healing process, so
awesome.
I'm doing a little substituting for him. He's on assignment.
Awesome, man. We look forward to talking to Dwayne when the time is right, Mike. And you know, listen, man, I didn't think the Dodgers were just going to like go away. Although I really would have loved them to be in an 0-3 hole. That was the hope yesterday. We talked about that quite a bit on the show. But Mike, I guess when you look back at what they did yesterday, the way they came back, I mean, we shouldn't be surprised, right? I mean, this is a team that is loaded for bear, so no surprise there. They get a big one yesterday.
Well, you know, it's unbelievable. I mean, you're sitting there watching them down two games, and they're down three runs in the eighth inning or whatever it was. I think it was the eighth. And they started looking up in the stands at the people, and they had the 1,000-yard stare. Everybody had the face. There's no expression. They're all accepting their loss and their defeat and their year. It's just all melting right there in front of their very eyes. And then they came and they showed the camera go into the Dodger clubhouse.
Yeah.
Or the Dodger dugout. And same thing. The players had the same look on their face that the people in the stands had. And then they showed cars leaving Dodger Stadium of a ballpark that didn't even sell out for the first time in 9 years. So this dismal story is just taking place, and then all of a sudden Bellinger gets up there with two on, down three, in a two-strike situation, and he hits a ball that we haven't seen him hit all year.
No.
In 2 years.
Yeah.
97-mile-an-hour fastball. I'm thinking, man, just throw a fastball up around the letters, and this guy's history.
Right.
He throws it right there, and he hits it over the wall, and it's a tie ball game. And just like that, just that quickly, the place energized. The 1,000-yard stares were gone. The 1,000-yard stares in the dugout were gone. The place was going nuts. People were trying to turn around on the freeway and go back up and watch the end of the ball game and get back in the ballpark. Oh, my God, it just happens that quickly. And the same thing happened in Boston.
Right.
In the 2-2 ball game.
Yeah.
I'm watching the first inning, and Zach Greinke's out there. And he, like, first inning, he throws a hanging slider, whoop, 2-1, Boston. I'm thinking, oh, my God, they're going to score 100 runs.
Yeah.
And in the end, they lose 9-2. So, unbelievable drama in the playoffs yesterday, and certainly no more than what we saw in L.A. And I agree, it has to be a bit painful for Giants fans.
Yeah, man, it does.
Yeah, and Mike, you know, the pitch that Bellinger hits out, I was thinking back to the hit he got against the Giants in Game 5. Because everybody talked about how many sliders were thrown to him by Camilo Duvall. And we were talking about, you know, Buster just kept calling the slider,
And he kept fouling him off.
Everybody said, why don't you throw a high fastball? And I'm thinking, well, Luke Jackson threw a high fastball yesterday, and Bellinger put pretty good wood on it. They asked Luke Jackson after the game, what would you do in that situation again? Or what did you think about that pitch? And he said, you know, if I had another opportunity, I'd probably throw the same pitch. I didn't think it was that bad of a pitch, Mike. He just got beat.
Exactly. I mean, that's what the big leagues is all about. You have big league hitters. You know, and the thing about Bellinger is he could not make the adjustment to that high fastball all year. And into last year. I mean, that's not an exaggeration. And as soon as every time he threw a breaking ball, Jackson yesterday in that at bat, I'm thinking, why are you doing that? Just keep climbing the ladder. You threw 97 right by him at the belt. Keep climbing the ladder. I'm yelling at my TV set. I'm yelling at it. And then he gives him that high fastball I'm talking about, and I'm thinking, yeah, and he hits it. Oh, my God. He hasn't used that swing in 2 years. I don't even know if he knew he had that swing. He surprised himself. But it's the nature of the game, man, where you can execute, you can make the perfect pitch, and you can get beat on it. And he got beat in the biggest of ways. He was stunned. Everybody on that team that wore a Braves uniform was stunned,
yeah,
because that was the pitch that they all knew had to be thrown. It got thrown, and it got beat.
Crazy, man. You know, and Mike, another interesting kind of talking point, I think, about this postseason we're all watching right now is Copes and I were talking about this earlier today, which is it feels like there's a lack of, like, just a marquee bionic man arm kind of thing out there, like in terms of a starting pitcher. Like, you see Buehler yesterday, who's been so great, who can be so dominant. First off, the Giants got him, Logan Webb, in the first game. And then yesterday, you know, Buehler, he doesn't get out of the fourth. He allows four runs. And, you know, the whole staff, it's felt weird with Scherzer kind of coming and going. They're putting him in different situations. And Urias the other night not even getting the start. They push him back and they give him the ball later in the game. Just feels weird to me, Mike. I don't know. What do you make of the starting pitching for the Dodgers and Buehler specifically yesterday?
Well, they're on fumes. I mean, it's the relationship that the Dodgers had with the Giants since the 1st of August. It takes its toll. I mean, yeah. you, these guys were pushing so hard, and they fell short, and then they recovered, and then they won the NLDS. They used every ounce of gas they had in the gas tank, and they just didn't have enough time. If they had been able to get 3 or 4 days off, maybe it would have made a difference. But even then, I don't know. I mean, it just, this team is at the bottom of the barrel. So, I mean, what they did yesterday was significant because they really did recharge their batteries. But even at that, I don't know if it's going to be enough, because I just see a team, especially on the pitching staff, especially on the starting staff, that they're tired,
yeah.
and I don't know if they can recover from that. That'll be one of the big stories as this playoff season goes forth.
Is it fair, Mike, to be critical of Dave Roberts in some of these decisions that he's made in when he goes to the bullpen and how many arms he's using? Because he's just trying to get outs. He's trying to get as many outs as he can. And to your point, these guys are gassed. I mean, they've been chasing the Giants. You said the other day to Murph and Mack when you were on, you know, they were exhausted, not just because, you know, physical chasing the Giants, but they mentally had to stay locked in for the last
all
6 months.
September. Yeah,
all
yeah.
of September, mm-hmm. especially.
Yeah.
You're playing a playoff game almost every single day. Now we're talking actual physical exhaustion on these arms into the postseason. Is it fair to be any kind of critical of Dave Roberts on any of these decisions?
Well, he's going to get criticized no matter what, especially when they lose. I mean, look, if you bring in Julio Urias in game two and mm-hmm. he pitches well, they win that game and there's no criticism. In fact, you know, he's applauded. The season or the series is evened up, and now all of a sudden you brought energy back. But one thing about Roberts and every manager in this tournament right now, they all know what one win means in this short playoff, in this short series. One win changes everything. The Astros were leaking oil, and all of a sudden, boom, they get a big win yesterday, and now all of a sudden it's all tied up. Well, guess what? They have energy.
Yeah.
It happens that quickly. And not only that, but the Red Sox now have doubts. So it's just, you know, it's that is the one thing that we love the most about the relationship of teams in these short series. And inevitably, the managers are going to get criticized, especially in losses. I don't like the fact that he brought in Urias in game two, because it wasn't an all-hands-on-deck game.
Right.
He was trying to win that game as best he could. He thought that was the best guy to bring in. And I don't overly criticize that. I just don't like bringing in...
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamins podcast wherever you listen.
A starter that early in the series, in game two of a 7-game series, I think when you bring a starter in, it's the sixth or seventh. It's a must-win situation.
Right.
And that was not a must-win situation. Sometimes, even in a short 7-game series, you have to eat a game. You have to lose a game to get your crew, you know, recharged and fill their tanks back up. I mean, it sounds ridiculous to say, but even when you're down one game, but I didn't like that move. But I mean, he knows his team. He knows what's in that bullpen. He knows what's not in that bullpen. We all assume the same thing that everybody assumes, that every pitcher can throw every pitch and he has everything at his beck and call at any given time. But that's not always the case. The manager knows that.
Right.
He knows what he has left. Hey, there may be a pitcher goes to a pitching coach and goes, look, I don't have a slider today. My arm's killing me. I just can't throw it. Well, what can you give me? Well, I've got a fastball and a changeup. I can give you that, and I give you an inning, maybe two. Well, that's how the conversation goes.
Wow.
So the manager knows that. So it may have been that, you know, he was protecting three or four guys in that bullpen by bringing in Julio Urias in that instant in that game to try and save it. We don't know that. So you have to give him the benefit of the doubt. And I just think over-criticism to any manager at this given time is really none of our business, because we don't know what's going on in that clubhouse or that training room.
Yeah.
Talking to Mike Kruko on the UMA guest line, from a Braves perspective, a lot of guys on this roster that were here last year, you've had this happen before. They were up 2-0, then they were up 3-1, and they coughed it to the Dodgers. I look at the Dodgers and I go, Dave Roberts, it was on the only team that ever came back from down 3-0. So even if it had happened yesterday, you'd have the right guy leading you in maybe trying to come back from down 3-0. If you're the Braves, from their perspective, seeing that you're up 2-1 again, how hard is it? And I know they're professionals, but we're talking, a lot of these guys are men, not machines. They're humans. They're people. How hard is it to force out any sort of history about how this crumble or this collapse has happened before?
Well, I don't think a lot of them really paid that much attention to last year. I mean, this is a completely different team, different chemistry,
right.
Different abilities. You can't dwell on the negative. I know one thing. I mean, when the Giants were down in 2010 or were in the 2010 playoffs and they were pushing hard to win a championship for a city that had never won one, I think that history may have had a little bit to do with the team's demeanor. I can think of the same thing in 2016 when the Cubs won. There was 108 years of failure that kind of tainted that attitude in the clubhouse. But you know, man, maybe in 2004 when the Red Sox turned around that year and they won it, which was remarkable. I mean, all three of those runs were remarkable, but simply because of the history. I do think history, if it goes that long, can definitely taint an attitude. It can make it a bit tougher to try and climb that hurdle. But I don't think last year, the fact that the Dodgers were down 3-1 in the series to the Braves, came back and won it, I don't think that has a lot to do with it. What guys do now is they get into a daily routine and they let that routine of work sort of wash out all of the distraction.
Nice.
And bring your concentration and together, which is what I think teams do a really, really good job of right now. And that's all they're going to concern themselves with today. When they go to the ballpark, they're just going to get themselves ready in a daily fashion like they've done all year, and then trust the process. That sentiment gets echoed across every clubhouse, especially this time of year, and that's all they're going to do. I don't think last year taints their minds at all.
Hey, Mike, over in the American League, I mean, this is where playoff baseball just is as good as it gets. You got a 2 p.m. first pitch, Game 5, Houston at Boston. We talked about the comeback win last night a little bit, Mike, but, man, what a big game this is going to be at Fenway Park today. I mean, the pivotal Game 5. I somehow see this thing going 7, though, Mike, regardless of who wins today. I mean, obviously, I don't have a crystal ball, but I think this is going 7. Just has that feel to me. But the mindset of a Game 5, Mike, I mean, like, you talked about the Astros getting the momentum yesterday, and certainly they did that in the ninth inning, and they'll have it all coming into today. But if you're the Red Sox and you've just taken one on the chin like that in the worst possible way, how do you dust yourselves off and kind of get back in the batter's box today, knowing this is not exactly a must-win, but damn close to being a must-win?
Well, I think it is to a degree because they're in Boston, and this is their last home game. And they don't want to go back to Houston down a game.
Right.
And then, you know, then you have two must-win games. That's tough. I mean, I can imagine what's in that clubhouse right now. Look, they had a 2-1 lead going into the eighth inning, and then they gave it up. You know, they had their best bullpen people in there. They gave it up. And then the ninth inning just how do you explain a 7-run ninth
no.
inning?
Yeah, yeah, no.
So, I mean, that's a whole new ball game. I mean, everybody's got refreshed mentally there. So I think that this is an incredibly important game for Boston simply because of its location. Their last game at Fenway Park. Take advantage of the last at bat. Take advantage of your crowd. So I think, you know, if it is going to go to 7, if they win today.
Okay.
If they lose today, there's no guarantee it's going to go seven. And I hope for a seven-game series in every seventh-game series. You know, even the Dodgers and the Braves, I want to see a seventh game.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, cool, man. And the base knock last night that gives the Astros the lead, Jason Castro. And I was talking to Paulie about this because I've always rooted for Castro because he's a Castro Valley guy, a Bay Area guy, went to Stanford, drafted the first round just like Buster Posey the same year. But then also what I think about is he's the guy who made the final out of the Matt Cain perfect game, the ground ball to Joaquin Arias. I always think about him as part of that, Mike. Hmm.
I do, too. I just did as soon as you brought his name up. I mean, you can't help it. And, you know, I root for the guy, too, because of all the things you said. And he's a great guy.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that he's had a really nice career, and he's still making big-time contributions. So good for him.
Yeah, good deal for Jason Castro. A cool moment. Paulie and I were running down some Joaquin Arias moments, and we both talked about that play. What a difficult, underrated play that was perfect game. But then we also were talking about his hustle. Was it game 3-2012 off of Homer Bailey? He hits the tapper to Scott Rolen, and Scott Rolen makes the error, and he beats it out at first base, and that was huge. That hustle play. Joaquin Arias was such one of those sort of glue guys that you needed on those.
Yeah.
You always need those supporting cast players. I miss a Joaquin Arias, Mike.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, you know he was such a good guy too. Very quiet and just an incredible family man, and one of those guys that kind of felt that he was always the 25th man to make the team. And he felt that he had to bust his tail in everything they asked him to do. Hey, Joaquin, can you go warm up the guy in the bullpen? He'd sprint down there. I mean, he just took on every task that they gave him, and he did it with that whole idea that I've got to bust my tail to be here.
Yeah.
And that type of player, I think, is infectious because he doesn't take a day for granted. Every day that he's in the big league, to him, is a gift. And really, when you think about it, that's the way we all should be about the big leagues and about life.
Yeah.
And Joaquin took advantage of it, man. He maxed out. I mean, he was an average talent player with incredible desire and drive. And you know, one thing he never got credit for, he had a great arm.
Yeah. Yeah.
He had a really good arm. Yeah. Anytime you put him in the middle infield and there was a ball hitting the gap and he got the relay throw, I always thought they had a chance to throw anybody out because of his arm and his accuracy. And that play he made to get the 27th out of the perfect game. And Castro, man, he didn't want to be on a team that got perfect gamed. So he was busting his tail. And at that time, for a catcher, he ran pretty well. And despite all that, you know, Joaquin, in a very awkward play, sets his feet and throws a seed to first base, and they get that 27th. And it was unbelievable. And I'll always remember him for that and for a lot of things.
Yeah.
But in the clubhouse, he was a star.
Nice.
Joaquin Arias, man. Good arm on him. One more here for you on the way out, Mike. Do you have a rooting interest? I look at this, and I know a lot of fans are saying, no Astros. They're still upset about the scandal.
Yeah.
Sort of feels like you go, you know, Alex Cora is the manager of the Red Sox. He was the bench coach on that Astros team. I look at one guy in the entire postseason, and I need Dusty Baker to get a World Series ring.
That's what we're thinking.
That's what I'm rooting for.
Yeah, me too. I mean, why not? I mean, I always root for the National League, but I kind of got over that, especially last year. But then, you know, with Dusty Baker, I love that guy. I loved playing with him. I loved the contribution he made as a coach, as a manager, as a man in the Bay Area. He was perfectly suited for the Bay Area to be a leader and to especially assume the responsibility of bringing a team into Pac Bell in 2000. I just thought that, you know, with Dusty at the helm, you always felt that you were a bit cooler than everybody else. And I think that's an edge that the Astros share. I mean, he is one of the most incredible communicators and people I've ever met in my life. And I wish him nothing but the best. I want to see him win. I want to see him get a parade.
Yeah, I echo that, Mike. There's a lot of us here in the Bay Area who still have a lot of love for Dusty Baker, so we're definitely rooting for him. In the meantime, Mike, hey, I believe we are going to talk to you again tomorrow, I believe, right, Mike?
Yes, we are. 7:35. Be there or be square.
I will be here. Mike, enjoy the ball games. We'll do it again tomorrow.
In a bit.
Mike Kruko, everybody, on KNBR 680. Adam Copeland in for Brian Murphy. Paulie Mack sitting right here. Only the beginning. Only the beginning. Shout out Chicago.
We've only just begun.
By the nice.
That's where I'm going.
Very nice.
Yeah.
By the way, you went to the 70s. I went to the 70s. Not sure why.
I don't either. Yeah.
When I sang We've Only Just Begun, I noticed Marcus started like nodding his head vigorously. Are you an Only Just Begun guy? That would be shocking. No, you just enjoyed the riff. Okay.
Dude, where do I get that from? Is that a Happy Gilmore thing? Is that where I pulled that out of?
We've only just begun. I don't know, but we might need to hear it, Spider, just to settle this.
I think Chubb sings it when he's in the Happy Gilmore's happy place.
Right.
And he's on the piano. He goes, "Hey, Happy, got my hand back, see?" And he starts, I think he's playing the piano.
Spider's going to cue it up. He and I are going to slow dance during the break We've Only Just Begun.
By the way, right before that is when Happy Gilmore tries to go to his happy place, but he can't because he's injured. And he sees I guess it's Shooter McGavin has the Kiss mask on.
That's my boy, Shooter McGavin.
And he makes out with his grandma, dude. Yeah, Simmons mask.
It happens.
With the tongue. Yeah.
There he is right there. Shooter, I got him right here.
Yeah.
All right, boys. We come back on the other side. What are we going to do? One roll of top six, Scopes, just for kicks?
Yeah, we'll go top six. Maybe a digression in there somewhere. And then, of course, the cooler of content.
Yeah, maybe more Marilyn Manson riffs, too. It depends. Oh, here we go.
Bad about me.
Hold on, let me get a piece of
it. Back, see?
Yeah, here we go.
Just begun.
Dude, that's not a bad vocal.
Bro, Weathers, bro.
Weathers is bringing it. Hold on. Respect.
Here we go. He gets it again.
Respect.
White lace and promises.
That's a damn good vocal.
Sounds great. Dude, I believe he's wearing a white suit.
Well, you're damn right he is. No, he's in heaven
on a white
now.
Piano,
he's an
too.
Angel. Yeah, that's Angel
Got
Carl
my
Weathers.
Hand back, see?
Yeah. Nice vocal. Spider, nice pull.
Yeah, nice.
Top six on the other side is KMBR 680, the sports leader.
Mike Kruko with Murph and Mac has been sponsored by your Northern California Honda dealers at NorCalHondaDealers.com. The Murph and Mac Power Hour surges on.
Feel the power.
Next on KNBR 104.5 and 680, the Sports Leader.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you were only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.